Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hi again. I'm Tobin Mitnick. If you're new here, I'm on a time-traveling adventure with the boys from Completely Arbitrary, Casey Clapp and Alex Croson. You see, last week they realized they'd covered every tree on their hit weekly nature podcast. As you can imagine, this was a big problem. That's where I come in. We're on a trip through time and space to show them the wonders of trees they missed the first time around. But of course, they can tell you more. In fact, they should be here any second.
Oh, my back.
Back? I think I hurt my shoulder. Do you have any idea what this means? This is my disc-throwing arm.
Relax! Whoever said time traveling was comfortable? Anyway, no pain, no episode for this week.
Where are we? Is this Isla Nublar?
Close. We're in China. 3 million BC.
Alex, look! Look at the trees! They're... Don Redwood.
No,
Don Redwood, Alex.
Oh, okay. Metasequoia glyptus triboides.
Finally, something cool. I've always known they're ancient trees, but to see them with my own eyes is...
harrowing. Did you say 3 million BC? Oh, I gotta go home. I have lunch with a friend tomorrow. I'm so far from home. Are there dinosaurs? Oh, is that one right there?
That's actually a log, but fret not. And don't get too cozy. Our real destination is a little more current. I just wanted to see how you would each react to all this, and it went exactly as I thought. Let me just put in the real date, and...
wow, it's so much less humid. Where are we?
In exactly the same spot. We've only moved temporally. This is the lab of Shigeru Miki.
The paleobotanist who discovered and named the Don Redwood?
One and the same!
Hey, there he is. Hello. We're sorry to intrude.
Japanese, Alex?
Doesn't matter. He can't hear or see you.
Oh.
Okay, so this is like the Christmas Carol now?
Yeah, didn't this whole thing start as a Bill and Ted homage?
It's still Bill and Ted.
It really feels more like Christmas Carol, Tobin.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not Christmas Carol. You know what? You guys are on your own. Enjoy your episode. I hope you choke on it.
Tobin!
You don't mean that.
Of course I don't. I'm just mad and sleep deprived. You try having a baby, an award show, a book launch, and a significant guest spot on a tree podcast the same week. Don Redwood 2, go!
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, dude.
Hey, dude. This is Casey Clapp, dude, other host of Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. Having said that, Alex,
wow.
We had a discussion earlier about dude versus bro.
Yes.
I don't think that those two are temporally distinct.
Well, okay. Well, the real thing came from you said bro in relation to Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Ah, yes.
By the way, this is Completely Arbitrary's Excellent Adventure, episode 2. Welcome.
Oh, yeah.
I said I think that movie predated calling people bro.
Yes.
I think that's like an early 2000s thing.
Interesting. And so I didn't know that.
You were a little...
like a surfer bro. Like, oh, hey, what's up, bro?
Yeah, I don't even know if they would call him a surfer bro.
I'm going to look this up,
Surfer
Alex.
Dude, right?
It's always Surfer Dude.
I mean, dude is very 80s and 90s,
wow.
Right?
Wow. Don't just Google bro.
Uh-oh, what'd you find?
It auto-filled with browserpopcorn.biz.
Oh, interesting.
I have no idea what that is.
That sounds like a scam website.
Yeah, I guess so. I just want to look at this. Bro... let's see, informal shorthand for brother. Let's see more.
Maybe the etymology, yes. Or the
no history. use over time. Early 16th century as a written abbreviation, as a colloquial abbreviation. It looked like it actually peaked, Alex, sometime around 1910, 1911.
Okay.
And then ever since then, it's just really dropped down.
Can you imagine those 1910 dudes calling each other bro?
Yeah. Hello, bro. I like your wagon and the shape of your horse's rump.
Yes. Now, is this... okay, he's talking about the literal horse.
Well, I mean, this is 18th century humor. I have no idea what they're talking about, Alex.
Well, Casey, we've had plenty of preamble.
We know what we're talking about today.
Yeah, that's right. We are talking about Don Redwood again. Metasequoia glyptostroboides. A whole new tale to turn. A whole new yarn to spin.
Whole new burn to start.
There you go. A controlled burn.
Yeah.
And Casey, we have a lot of new things to say about the Don Redwood here in Shigeru Miki's office. But we have to do so after the break. We'll be right back with Completely Arbitrary's Excellent Adventure. Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is G-O-O-D-R. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
The time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses mm-hmm. is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for completely arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving completely arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees. And use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees. And use code trees for free shipping. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant, or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About out now, wherever you get your pods. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary's Excellent Adventure. Today we're talking Don Redwood again. Metasequoia. Glyptostrobates. Casey.
Yes.
We have set the precedent that we're not going to fully ID these trees again.
Correct.
Because we did such in our previous iterations of
exactly.
these episodes. Exactly.
And of course, if you want to listen to that, you should.
Yes.
End of point.
It really did sound like you were going somewhere.
I know.
But we also wanted to give a brief recap on how to ID this tree. So let's imagine that you and I are here in this valley in China.
Yes. Well, hold on. Where are we in the valley in China?
Well,
or are we in an office in Kyoto?
Okay. I thought about this in the script. I mean, Tobin said when he dropped us off that we have not moved physically, only temporally. So I took that to mean that we are in Shigeru Miki's office in China, where maybe it's a temporary office.
Ooh.
Where he's doing some research collection.
Uh-oh.
Does that not track with what's real?
No.
Okay. Well, Tobin must have not understood what he was talking about. Time travel can really mess with your head.
It can really mess with your head. We're in four places at once right now, which is sweet.
Really, if you want to zoom out, we're in infinite places at once.
Oh, yeah.
And infinite times.
Exactly. So what's the problem is what I'm asking here.
It's time for us to talk about L. Ron Hubbard, Casey.
Okay, I've been waiting for this for 2 years now, Alex.
Casey, wherever we may be, plot holes aside, let's ID this tree.
Oh, right. So the big thing that everyone loves and knows about the Don Redwood is that it is a deciduous conifer.
Hell yeah.
Now, the thing about it being a deciduous conifer is that it loses its needles, making it a conifer that has a gorgeous fall color.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing that I think, like whenever I see this tree, I walk up to it and it's got this really like orange kind of shaggy looking bark.
Hmm.
And it's got armpits underneath where its branches used to be.
Right.
Do you remember talking about that?
Yeah, armpit is the perfect way to describe
it. Really is. Like you can't even describe it any other way.
Yeah, a little alcove underneath its limbs.
It's a little alcove. And this happens because the branch, where the branch comes out, the wood underneath it doesn't grow as much. It's not connected, so it doesn't get a direct transfer of nutrients. It's actually connected only on the side and kind of on top. Wood anatomy aside, there still is some amount of growth there, but it's just very minimal.
Sure.
So it kind of just develops that fun shape.
Yeah, that is a lot of fun. I love a little quirk like that.
Right, and one that like helps you ID a tree, you know? Usually say, well, it has a certain form, but this one, like, almost always of a certain age, you can find a lot of these growing on it.
Yeah.
So the other thing, of course, is that it has these little needles that come out, but they kind of come out in little twiglets, which is kind of fun.
Mm.
Instead of having individual needles like what you'd imagine on a fir or a pine, which a pine doesn't even necessarily have it. They all come in the bundles, right?
Sure, but it's not even that.
It's not even that. This is where they have a twig that comes out, and the twigs are oppositely arranged down the twig, or the twiglets are oppositely arranged going down this twig.
Okay.
Then they unfurl where they look like a redwood, like a coast redwood, where they have like these flat two-rank needles coming out on either side. But that entire twiglet is the deciduous part, which is kind of wild to think about. Like it's like a little teeny tiny branch that is in and of itself deciduous.
Right. So come fall time, and they call it, you know why they call it fall?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all these... Well, these damn leaves are falling off.
Falling
trees.
Everywhere. Yes.
That whole little twiglet falls off. It's not like the individual needles fall off, right?
Wait, I want to hold on for a second, Alex.
Oh, boy.
Can we start calling all the other seasons other names?
Okay, well, summer, you got hot.
Yeah. Welcome to hot.
Yeah.
And then what about like grow during spring?
Sure.
What would winter be?
Like
just
cold?
Yeah. Just opposite?
I think so.
Is that? You got fall, grow, cold and hot.
Yeah, I guess if you want to get more granular, you could be like, why isn't winter fall? Because the snow is falling.
Yeah, you know? Okay. Yeah, well, we're talking about the leaves. I mean, let's just keep it focused on the plants, maybe.
Oh, sure.
So then if it's not hot and cold, if it's focused on the plants, it can be just like naked and and leafed.
Winter's nude.
Nude, and then...
Spring is grow.
Spring is grow.
And summer is...
Show.
Show.
Yes.
Are you a shower or a grower? Be honest.
Well, this is, you know, in the summertime, yeah. I'm definitely a shower. But in the springtime, I'm a grower, Alex.
I'm a grower year round, baby.
Anyway, thank you for indulging me. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. My pleasure.
Where were we?
Well, we talked about the needles.
Yes.
The leaflets composing a leaf or something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
Needlelets, maybe we should call them.
And I love that.
That whole chunk dropping off in the fall.
Whoosh, turns bright, beautiful, like kind of tan, orange, yellow. Mm. It's just a delight.
And let's talk cone, Case.
Oh, the cone, Alex. I actually, since the recording of our last episode, I got it tattooed on me. It's right there.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, isn't it adorable?
It is a wonderful little cone.
Yeah, thank you, Alex.
It's a peltate cone.
It is peltate. It's in the cypress family.
There you go. Yes. I guess I didn't even really know that.
Yeah, well, it used to be in its own family, the Taxodiaceae.
Oh, that's right.
But that family is now dissolved to a kind of subfamily level within the Cupressaceae, the cypress family.
You hate to see it.
You hate to see it, but it was just tectonic movements in the taxonomic world.
Tectonic Movements in the Taxonomic World. My favorite Talking Heads record.
That is, yeah, that was one of their best. David Byrne, like he's such a taxonomist freak. So yeah, that is a little peltate cone.
Yes. And this, little, you say little.
Yes.
You mean little.
I mean little, Alex. It's only maybe an inch long.
I feel like even an inch is big for these cones.
I think you're right. Yeah, that's a good size. Like that is very much of the highest percentile, right?
Yeah. You hear that? An inch is big, yeah, okay, guys? Yeah.
The Don Redwood is a grower and not much of a shower, sorry. It does have, Alex, a very long stem that comes off of the cone.
Yes.
This is important. We'll talk about this in a little bit. But that is one very unique thing that most of the other conifers that it's closely related to do not have. They don't have that long stem that's connected to it.
Right. Is that called a petiole, Casey?
No, because it's on a cone, it would be, I think technically, because it's a fruit, it would be a peduncle.
Peduncle.
Yes, I believe that would be the case.
I very understandably confuse those two.
Obviously, which I think is very good to have that kind of as a problem to deal with.
Sure.
You don't have to keep track of that, Alex, is what I'm saying. you got me here. This is the role we play.
All right.
So the other thing to consider is that the peltate cone scales mm-hmm. are oppositely arranged from each other, and there's two of them. There's two pairs. So there's one pair that is going, say, left and right, and then the other pair is at a 90-degree angle to those, which would be, oh, I guess, I don't know, front and back, maybe.
You know what I like to think of?
How? What?
As of right now? Uh-huh. You know, like Lincoln Logs?
Yeah.
They kind of sit like on top of each other and have a little indent.
Yeah,
it's a little bit like that if you crisscross two Lincoln Logs.
Totally, they gotta be 90 degrees to each other.
Yeah.
So that is it. That is the big thing that actually set the Don Redwood apart when Shigeru Miki actually looked and said, hold on a second, this is a little bit different, Alex.
Yes.
It's the cone that really set him apart from everything else.
Interesting. Well, Casey, you have uncovered the fossil, so to speak. Today we are talking not just Don Redwood.
Yes.
Not just its discoverer and namer, Shigeru Miki, but the whole idea of paleobotany, which means old plants.
Yes, precisely, Alex. It's also kind of a story about how these things get named, because I kind of wanted to bring that up. I know a lot of people, when we asked our Patreon members what they wanted to hear, they all wanted to hear a little bit about the story of how this happened.
Yes.
So I thought what we'd first start doing is talk about paleobotany, kind of what it is, right? And like you said, that it is old plants, right? But what do you know about paleobotany?
Well, I got to admit, not much, but I can extract some inferences.
All right, yeah.
Paleobotany is, the study of fossilized plants.
That's it.
And that's all I got to say about it. You find a rainbow wood, right?
Uh-huh, yes.
And you're like, who's going to study this? You want to find a paleobotanist.
Yeah, exactly, because a botanist is studying the living plants. A paleobotanist is studying the old ancient plants.
Right.
They are no longer around unless you're one of those lucky paleobotanists that happen to find a botanist who finds an extant is the term. It's the opposite of extinct, where a plant is extant if it is still alive.
Okay.
Versus extinct if it no longer has any individuals that represent its species.
Interesting.
So, most paleobotanists don't get the opportunity that Shigeru Miki might have had. I actually am not sure exactly when he died, because the way that it worked with Don Redwood is you had initially all these people who were studying fossils. Now, fossils and just digging things in rocks and finding them was a huge pastime in like the 1800s. Mostly, and I don't know that this is surely true, but I have a sneaking suspicion, it has a lot to do with coal. You familiar with coal, Alex?
Well, yeah, I have a basic understanding.
Are you a bad child during Christmas?
Boy, am I familiar with coal.
Coal, Alex, as I'm sure you're aware, is essentially old plants that have been smashed down and turned into essentially their carbon base. They're hydrocarbons, right?
Okay, yeah.
This is, it all comes from the Carboniferous period, a lot of this stuff. And it's this time period in ancient history where there was just swamps filled to the brim with plants everywhere, like all over every place.
Okay.
They slowly died, and then they piled up inside of these swamps. Imagine a lake that just gets filled to the brim over eons and eons of plant matter until there's no longer a lake there to speak of. There's just all this stuff that's been smashed.
Okay.
It's been underneath water. Because it's underneath water, it has very little oxygen or no oxygen whatsoever. So it doesn't decompose. It just gets transitioned and put under pressure and turned into this secondary chemical kind of substance, which is coal, oil, that kind of thing.
Secondary chemical.
Yeah. I will admit right now, I am not a geologist, so I don't know the exact process, how it goes from A to B.
That was the wrong thing for me to follow up on, I'll say that. I knew.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
Sorry, Casey.
Anyway, let me ask you quick, Casey, here's a quick question. What exactly does coal, how does it work?
I get it enough. Get it enough. It's plant matter that was smashed over billions of years.
Yeah. Well, millions of years.
Hundreds of millions of years.
Yes.
Can I say hundreds?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Hundreds
easily.
Of
yeah,
years.
Yeah, for sure.
And just turned into this other thing. It got all of the plantness smashed out of it.
Yeah.
Till it just became carbon incarnate.
Exactly. And it's flammable. Like, it is definitely a flammable thing, just like wood is flammable. You're burning off the carbon. You're doing the same thing that is this combustion reaction, right?
Sure. And that's how I know coals, that I guess charcoal.
Charcoal. Yeah. Well, this is the coal that you have to get from the, you dig it up from the ground.
Via a coal miner.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, because these are all plants, right? There are just so many fossils in coal beds where if we went down and we just dug around and chipped off some things, you could find fossils in coal of different plants.
Mm.
So they started looking around. They were like, oh, there's coal everywhere. Look at all these cool plants. And we found fossils.
Interesting.
Again, I am not, I'm saying this, but this is a part of our 30% might be false.
You don't even have to explicitly state it anymore,
Thank
Casey.
You. I am not 100% sure, but for whatever reason, in the late 1700s, 1800s, finding fossils became like the cool thing to do.
Have kind of an idea.
Yeah? Okay.
Well, I think it has a little bit to do, maybe this came later, but a little bit to do with like the discovery of like, quote, ancient civilizations by imperialists.
I think so, where they it's just the scientific kind of Western science revolution.
Yeah.
Where it was just really interested in everything. Thing, and this was just another one of those things.
When was like the British, like those British dudes with pith hats and you know, mustaches, and they go into the jungle with a rifle and they'd be like, I think there's an ancient tomb somewhere around here. Like, when was
like
that?
Jumanji style?
Yeah. Or discovering the Egyptian pyramids, you know, and breaking into them with no regard for
honestly, late 1800s, early 1900s.
Okay, that's about where I placed it.
Yeah, 1920s is when I imagine all these things happening.
Okay.
But then there was a bunch of other stuff like this happening in the 1800s, you know, there was plenty of different areas where they found evidence of fossils and evidence of old things that they're just like, what are these things?
Sure.
So, as a paleobotanist, they wanted to figure out what a bunch of these plants were. So we started in the late 1700s to put plants in different orders and taxonomy, right? We had Carl Linnaeus be like, okay, here's how we're going to organize everything. Then we started doing that for all the living things. But then we'd find fossils and we'd say, wow, this looks just like an oak, except for this, or except for this.
Ah, okay.
We find all these things that don't look anything like any plant we have today. Then we would find some that look sort of like a plant we have today. And we went back and we have found entire orders and families of plants that have gone completely extinct.
Wow.
Not a single one has been alive for 20, 40, 200 million years.
Whole orders.
Yeah. Like,
so we can like mark a beginning and an end to this is when this plant order existed.
Exactly. Because we found fossils up to a certain date and not before a certain date.
Sure.
So we can say, okay, they were around here. They're most closely related to the modern day podocarps. But then just one went off and did its own thing for a while and then succeeded for a couple million years and then just plummeted and went away.
Very
never
interesting.
Never to be seen again.
Okay.
So paleobotanists are the people that look at this and they do a couple things. One, they find fossils and they look at the individual, which it's essentially, as you recall, when we looked and talked about our rainbow wood, they are looking at the imprints that are left behind from whatever was there in the first place. One of the things that they will find is, say, a leaf or a twig or a fruit or something like that, bark sometimes. And then they just take a really close look at it.
How close are we talking?
Microscopically close, sure. Alex.
And they're comparing it to maybe other plants that are similar that mm-hmm. are extant?
And extinct. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
They essentially take a look at both and they see a plant and they say, what is this? Is it still alive? And if it's not, where does it lie in the family tree?
Mm.
And they try to essentially figure out the history of life over the course of time that we can't see just directly in front of us.
Sure.
So paleo, of course, like you said, it means ancient or old. So what they're doing is they're going back and they're saying, wow, okay, what used to be here? And there's also a kind of side paleo thing called paleoecology, which is essentially trying to figure out what the environment was like where all these plants that they find were growing.
Cool.
Obviously, it kind of seems like one leads to the other, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that any like... botanist is also studying a little ecology, right?
Yeah, and then if you find a plant in a certain spot, you're like, oh, well, it must have been that in Oregon 50 million years ago, mm-hmm. there was an oak tree that was here. There was a beech tree. There was a this tree. There was a that tree.
Right.
So it kind of leads on to that. Like, you just finding one is you finding a piece of a puzzle, but technically another person with a different title is the one who actually puts the puzzle pieces together.
Oh, sure.
So I really think that they're kind of, you know, two sides of the same coin to some extent.
Yeah. I can imagine it's almost sort of like a dissatisfying lifestyle.
Well, why? Why would it be dissatisfying?
Only because, like, I don't know, like, how often might you find some big, I guess this is all sciences, like, but like, how often would it be that you find some big kind of revelatory thing, you know?
Honestly, I think it's actually not so unrare.
Well, I stand corrected. I need a hat to eat.
Oh, Alex, you're not going to eat any hat. I think it's a fine question because you're like, well, you're digging in rocks. You know, how many new rocks are you going to kind of find?
I suppose so. I'm not saying that it's, quote, digging at rocks.
Okay, yes. I am the one who's saying digging in rocks, Alex. Don't misquote me like that.
In the same way that a concert guitarist is not plucking at strings.
Yeah, okay. That's a good metaphor. Well, so as it happens, these are people that are trying to reconstruct some kind of history.
Okay.
Whether or not it is the history of just a family tree where they said, okay, well, there's a species of birch. We found this hidden link between the firs and the pines, you know, something like that. They are tending to either be looking to see what's there or looking because they want to know what a place was like. And the only thing they can do is find what was growing there.
Gotcha.
So this is what our friends were doing over at over in Kyoto, Shigeru Miki.
Right.
So Miki had originally found two species of fossil sequoia. At least that's what he thought they were. And this is what he named Sequoia distica and Sequoia japonica.
Ooh, the Japanese sequoia. Does that exist today?
No, it doesn't. Damn it. But wouldn't it be so cool if it did?
I just want to see what it looks like.
Yeah. Well, this, it turns out, you know exactly what it looks like because those are the Dawn Redwood. Now, if that's not time travel, I don't know what is, Alex.
What a twist.
So there's another species that was found by another paleobotanist called S. Endo, and I can't find Endo's first name.
Oh, okay.
He's listed in all these things, and there's some great resources that we have linked to about just this thing. I was trying to look this up, and I got so much good information from Arnold Arboretum. It's great.
Oh, nice. About Shigeru Miki and this whole thing?
About this whole thing, okay. Which is so fascinating, and I'm just so tickled to retell this story.
Well, let's tell it.
So, essentially, these two guys found fossils, and they were like, yeah, so here is, these are three different species of what we think are sequoia, because when you look at their leaves, they look just like sequoia. But you can't necessarily tell if they are deciduous or evergreen. In this case, we've learned now that they are deciduous. So they would look at them and they say, aha, well, maybe this is just a different species of sequoia.
Mm.
Then, sometime in the early 1940s, some foresters, some folks working in China were walking around, and they found a couple different species of trees that at the time they would call them, or the locals called it, a water fir.
Ooh.
And I think we might have talked about this because that was just their kind of common term.
Yes.
So there was a guy who was working at, his name is T. Kan, and he was working at the Department of Forestry at the National Central University, and this is in China, in Sichuan.
Hmm.
So he saw along the side of the road that there's these weird trees. So he talked to this other guy that was working at the agricultural high school, and he said, can you get me some of those like seedlings or a couple of those branches? So then they ended up sending him over to this other guy whose name is Sen Su Hu. And I should say, Alex, that's spelled H-S-E-N space H-S-U space H-U.
Okay.
And I'm not necessarily the best at pronouncing these things.
I think would be...
Yes. Sen Su Hu.
Sen Su Hu?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's this person's name.
All right.
He's a professor and at the Fan Memorial Institute in Biology in Beijing. So this guy then started working with a couple other of these things. He had these papers that these Japanese paleobotanists had, and he said, I think these are all the same species. Not only that, but these other foresters found this exact species growing, and it's still alive.
You know how I see this scene playing out, Casey?
How?
It's like... when a little kid, you know, a movie where a little kid in the desert finds like a piece of metal.
Yeah.
And he like shows it to his dad, and his dad's like, I've never seen anything like this before.
Uh-huh.
And his dad takes it to a coworker who has a cousin who works for this, you know, yeah. And then they like pass it up the chain until like it's on the president's desk, and he's
my
like,
God,
it's aliens.
Yeah. And the little kid's just like, whatever.
This sort of reminds me of the ascension of the chain of command of this water,
yeah.
For
oh my stuff. God. And Alex, I think that's like so correct.
I need to see this in a movie.
So the movie becomes that, like, the 1920s, in this case 1940s, version of what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Of like the British kind of savari folks going down with their hats and their guns and their mustaches.
Yeah.
You know, the Jumanji style guy. And then they kind of started to really want to find this.
Mm.
So this professor that we're talking about, Sen Su Hu, was the first botanist from China to earn a PhD at Harvard University.
Wow.
Which is where the Arnold Arboretum is. So that is where Arnold Arboretum was the first to send over a bunch of money and some people to go try to find this tree and bring back samples to the United States.
I had no idea the Arboretum's been around that long.
Oh, yeah. This is one of the oldest, biggest ones. Yeah. I don't know when it initially started, but it is a spectacularly ancient place. It's really, really cool.
Interesting.
If anyone gets a chance to go to Arnold Arboretum, do.
I want to go.
We're going to do it, Alex. I don't know when we're going to do it, but we're going to do it.
Arbitrary does Boston.
Yeah, all right. We're going to go get some Boston Lagers. So they ended up also getting in touch with a Professor Cheney at the University of California.
Hmm.
So all these people at Harvard and this Dr. Cheney were really excited to go get this tree. So they ended up going over and got a couple other people to help them, some porters, a bunch of other like help folks to help them travel and like carry stuff. Like, they made this huge long trek. Like, the day after World War II ended.
Oh my God.
Because we should keep in mind, this is all happening like 1946 in all the 1930s and 1940s, when China was in such a huge catastrophic meltdown at the time, politically speaking.
Yeah.
There's like the communist revolution is coming on one side. Japan for like the last 20 years has essentially colonized much of China, and the whole place is just like not doing well. Then they find these trees and everyone's like, I gotta get those trees. Give me to those trees.
It's a little glimmer of hope, or is it just like, is it like something to put on the front page that isn't war?
You know, I'm not sure. I really am not sure what it was. I think it was a little bit of, we really want to see this tree. And it was like, it was one of those monumentous discoveries. Even in 1940s, everyone was saying, this is the scientific discovery of the century.
Wow.
And to this day, I think Arnold Arboretum actually in like 1998 or some other, you know, good, I don't know, announcer of things, stated that this was still the find of the century in 1998.
Wow.
Keep in mind, Alex.
Well, keep in mind an arboretum is saying this.
Yes.
That's what the real...
Well, it's keep in mind, yes, it's an arboretum. He's like, yeah, a tree that we thought was extinct.
Right.
But keep in mind, like not 4 years before that, they found the Willamy Pine. Before 1998. So,
okay.
You know,
I see what you're doing here. Casey's like,
how many finds of the century can you have, Alex?
We don't want to pit these trees against each other, but if we had to, clearly.
No. Let's,
you know.
I think Don Redwood wins.
Well, that's what I'm saying is the subtext.
Yeah, all right. I'm
saying that this thing from the 40s is the find of the century, not all this right. thing at, you know,
not
at the very end of the century.
Start from Australia.
Right, exactly.
Oh, Ian Allen's going to be so mad at me for saying that.
Sorry, Ian.
So this expedition, Alex, that went through was led by this guy called Ralph Cheney. He's a paleobotanist at the University of California, Berkeley. So he kept on going down and got all these things together, talked with Professor Hu, and finally was like, let's go do it. And I swear to God, I'm going to show you this picture of these guys. Is that not the most like 1940s like picture of two white guys looking at a tree? Like they're wearing like their hunting caps and like all this stuff.
Yeah, this is straight out of that kind of adventure serial,
right?
You know,
it totally is.
Can I ask, was Miki involved in this expedition at all?
No, he wasn't.
Now,
I don't believe
this,
so.
Is this sad? Is this like a bit of whitewashing? Is this?
Well, I mean, it's about to be a bit of whitewashing.
Okay,
but it's not. I don't think it is at this time because he is a paleobotanist. Like his job, his thing that he does is he looks at fossils.
I see.
So he's just
this
like,
is not a fossil.
Yeah. So once you look at a bunch of fossils and then other people are like, oh, actually, I think this tree exists. Maybe if they were excited, but I have to iterate here. If Miki is still alive at this point, because this is literally the day after World War II, two atomic bombs dropped on his country.
Sure.
Then it is likely that he wouldn't really be welcomed in China right now.
Oh, okay.
So
he didn't have an extra office in China.
Yes.
Like Tobin thought.
Like Tobin thought.
Not Tobin.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So I'm not sure of all those small things, but I can say that the only people who are really discussed after this are a few people who were credited with the co-finding of the tree in some papers. Dr. Chang was one of these people. It was a character we haven't introduced. Another eminent botanist called Elmer D. Miller with the Arnold Arboretum, and like a couple other people who kind of started to get involved in this. But a lot of the people who did the initial finding, that was even done, I think a lot of those researchers did that like in the decades prior. Like I think I saw one thing from 1928.
Wow.
It was one of these papers that said that this is a tree, you know?
Okay.
So before really, it's a fossil tree, I guess.
Just four words on this 300-page document. This is a tree.
Oh my God.
the photocopied.
Over and over and over and over.
And Wendy Torrance finds it on Jack Torrance's desk.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole thing gets really freaking.
Okay, I understand, Casey. Okay. I understand.
So
this is such a cinema. I can't stress how much this is so cinematic.
We should make this into a movie.
I mean, it needs to be.
Yeah, and then, write this up.
But the thing is, it would be noted to death by the studios because they'd be like, there should be a monster there that attacks them.
Hey, you know. Well, I mean, we're in a place of high art, Alex. I think we can make this happen.
How about it's the monster of imperialism? It's all sort of an analogy.
Please. Ooh, you could also do the monster of communism because
hey,
while they were doing this, they literally had armed guards take them over to this tree because I think the communist, I guess it would just be the Red Army. No, because that's the Russian army. I don't know, but like this is right before the communist revolution in China.
Okay.
So they were like poised to invade this entire area and like take it over.
Wow.
So they had to like get in and get it done and take a look at it and get out really fast.
Man, they really wanted that tree.
Oh, yeah, they did. And the whole thing ended up becoming a giant sensation.
Yeah.
They came back and one of the guys who was there was a guy named Milton Silverman.
Hmm.
He is a newspaper writer for the San Francisco Chronicle.
Great journalist name,
great
by the way.
Journalist name, isn't that? Yeah. What is? Hello, I'm Milton Silverman. Yeah. Could I ask you some questions?
Oh, just one more thing.
Just one more thing. Milton Silverman here. All of a sudden, he's in Boston. We're going to find him in our room. So he was also sent by Save the Redwoods League, which is a group that specifically, way back when, got started to just save the Redwoods. They literally put in their name.
Mm.
And they're one of the biggest nonprofits to help protect the Redwoods of Northern California coast.
Interesting.
As well as the Sequoias, I think. They kind of do a lot of different stuff. So, of course, they have we got to go find the only other living Redwood that's out there. So they ended up carrying these guys out, and they put this big newspaper article that ran and became this huge thing, and they are the ones who termed it the Dawn Redwood.
Okay.
But the thing is, people got so, so upset. This guy Merrill specifically, he was one of the guys that sent money over to China to get them to send back some of the things. So he basically was like, yes, we'll fund this. I'm with Armored Arboretum. Hi, give us your trees.
Oh, did maybe he want it named after himself?
No, he didn't want it that. He specifically is like, you guys are taking all of the credit, like this Cheney guy who went over there from California, who then came back and had the newspaper article run. He got a bunch of credit for the quote discovery of this tree,
right?
And this is something we talk about all the time, where we're like, well, white guys didn't discover this tree, people knew about it for a long time.
Yes.
But in this case, Merrill is also like, no, the people who discovered that tree are the Chinese foresters and scientists that actually did the work. Like,
okay.
All of these people that we can't even pronounce their name because we don't speak their language very well.
Yeah.
He's like, no, those are the people who found this tree. You guys just went over and took pictures of it and came back and ran a newspaper article.
That is a surprising take, I
think. Isn't that like...
I thought it was going to be he was pissed that he wasn't at least credited for funding it.
Yeah.
Or that it wasn't named after him because he was credited for funding it. But he gave credit to the actual Chinese foresters who were working with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, good for Milton.
He did say, though, he conceded that Cheney, and this is from the Redwood Leagues, that Cheney had collected the saplings. So he said, yes, you collected the saplings and you brought them over. And as a quick side note, apparently Cheney, this guy, went ballistic because when he flew them back over, customs wouldn't let him take them in.
Oh, shit.
They were like, no, you can't just take these trees. We have to incinerate them because they certainly have some disease on it that we can't just let in. And he just went absolutely bonkers in the airport. It was like yelling about how old they are until apparently, I don't know how true this is, apparently one guy came over, like some passenger who just was overhearing this explosion and was like, wait, so how old are they? Oh, they're like hundreds of millions of years old. Well, I guess those technically should count as antiques then. And then they said, fine, they're antiques and let them come through
custom. Shit.
Isn't that hilarious?
That's canon. Let's just say it's true.
Yeah, let's just say it's true. It's just so good.
That's amazing. By the way, I want to redact. I said good job, Milton, earlier.
Yes.
I confused Milton with this Meryl.
Yes.
All these guys look and sound the same in my head.
They do. And honestly, we didn't do a good job of introducing all of our characters here. So,
well, there's just too many.
Sorry, everyone.
It's like 12 Angry Men, but none of them have names.
Yeah, right. There you go. Or they have names that are all very confusing. But the last thing I will say, Meryl was a little bit upset also because he wanted them, like, he had some credit. He's the one who basically funded these people initially, like, sending over seeds and doing these things.
Yeah.
Newspaper article completely left him out. He also was really upset because he basically said that the era of colonialist botanical, quote, raids had ended.
Wow.
So he was definitely, like, before his time.
Yeah, this is a progressive, like, dude.
Exactly, didn't you think?
Yeah.
Like, it's stunning to me, Alex, that someone in the 1940s at this point was even remotely concerned with this, because normally, back then, certainly, right after World War II, racism was, like, at its height. Like, certainly a height. I mean, it's probably had several peaks in the past.
Yeah.
But it was, like, one of those things where, like, wow, you're not just jumping for credit for this yourself? All right.
That's kind of incredible. Yeah.
You just think so?
I like this guy, Meryl.
Meryl. All
right. Shout out to Meryl. Hey, let's put him in that hall Arboretum of Fame along with David Douglas. Huh?
We'll give him an honorary Scotch botch.
Yeah, he's an honorary Scotch botch. Meryl, you're going into the Arboretum of Honor. Congrats. Way to not be a shit head.
Yeah, way to just not be completely awful.
Yeah.
This is one of the things though with Cheney. He was a paleo ecologist.
Okay.
He wanted to collect samples of this tree because all he really cared about, the thing in his deepest heart, mm-hmm. was figuring out how these trees grow today, where they grow, so that he could figure out what other places that have their fossils must have once been like.
Okay.
It's a pretty good assumption. It's not foolproof, but if you just have a tiny little grove, same thing as the Woolamai pine, the coast redwoods, the California sequoias, all of these things, they live in these relic habitats because they're the only places that they can grow. But if they're found everywhere across all these different continents, as the Don Redwood is, you can assume that at some point they were growing all over there because it was all the same kind of general conditions.
Sure.
So when you find them growing today, you can say, okay, so those are the conditions that they're best adapted for. They probably haven't changed too much over the last several million years. So we can jump to at least a not awful conclusion that all the other places we find the fossils at some point must have had that same kind of climate.
Makes sense.
And that's how we start putting these puzzles together.
Wow.
He's the puzzle piece guy.
Do we know where the first Don Redwoods to be planted in? I mean, Arnold Arboretum, I'm assuming?
Yes,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
But that's the thing. They sent seeds over to all sorts of different universities.
Sure.
I think it was like 4 pounds of seeds only.
Oh my God.
It's so many
seeds.
That's
a lot of seeds.
Yeah, and they grew them all over the place from anywhere in the United States that has like a big old one. First off, as we noted, nothing's older than 1946. Nothing.
Like, okay.
Only the ones that are growing in China. Every other one in the entire world is less than that.
That's pretty incredible. That's a profound point, Case.
Yeah. So I think there's a few here in Oregon, at least one at the University of Oregon, I'm pretty positive.
Okay.
Probably also at Oregon State. And I don't know about Hoyt Arboretum. It was an arboretum at the time, but I don't know that they necessarily have one. I know they have plenty of Don Redwoods.
Sure, maybe not one from that episode.
From that exact, like, you know, the first, you know, flush of seeds, so to speak. Yeah, I don't know.
The first Wells Fargo's Express delivery.
Ba-bing! There's horses
little,
riding up. Yeah, we got
a little later.
We got a lot of eras coming in here. Tobin, what have you done to
us?
Listen,
anytime before 1975 is just a big blur for me.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. So
one
your Model
big
T
melting pot
goes across the Oregon Trail.
Yes,
okay,
yes,
I see.
Yes. I put those in the sand. They come across some cavemen.
Okay, yeah, which makes sense. Those cavemen are eating Don Redwood seeds.
Well, okay, interesting. Yeah, that's quite the tale, Casey.
Yeah, does that all make sense? Can you?
Yeah, it tracks. The characters are a little muddied for me, but that's my fault.
Yeah. I'll take some credit for that, Alex.
Well, it's overtly cinematic, which I like about it.
Mm.
I am grateful to this Meryl man for giving credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
And I also am like, man, thank God those trees didn't have a disease on them.
Yeah.
That killed all the trees in North America.
Now, here's a question, Alex.
And we got it over the border through a loophole.
We did,
through a made-up loophole.
It must be an antique. All right. I just don't want to hear you yell at me anymore. Here's my question, Alex.
Yeah.
What if it did? What if we planted it over here and it became a horrendous invasive species?
Yeah.
Would we still be like, oh, yeah, it's a cool, beautiful living fossil piece of shit?
Yeah, I think it would be reviled, much like, you know, Tree of Heaven Bradford pear, another funny, like,
fair.
Go get this tree and plant it here.
True, also from China, same thing.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, you know.
I wish that it would grow back here in a semi-invasive way, because I kind of just like what that would look like.
Oh, yeah.
Because it fits our flora still. Like, it fits everything. It also makes me feel like it would be a throwback a little bit, you know? Like, a little bit of like, I remember these rocks. I've been here before.
Right.
You know? I kind of think that would be kind of fun to see just another little grove pop up, just being like, I'm back.
A throwback to 20 million years ago?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Throw way back.
Right? I think, as I was looking through here, I think the most recent one was, I think, 2 million years old. But I don't know where that was exactly from. Oh, you said 20, which is totally right.
Oh.
But I know that there were, in Oregon, around 50 million years ago, there was, I think they called it Metasequoia occidentalis or occidentale, something like
that.
Which, again, with paleobotany, because we can only see certain little bits, we can say, okay, we know that this is some kind of metasequoia. We know it's over here, so we're going to give it a full scientific name.
Mm-hmm.
But because you can't see the rest of the tree, and it has to be connected to the rest of the tree in order to be fully sure that it's from, you know, that these two parts are of the same thing.
Sure.
You can't say for 100% positive that these weren't, in fact, four different species of metasequoia that just looked all exactly the same in their leaf shape, but maybe their cones were wildly different, or one grew a certain different way, or one was evergreen and one wasn't. Like, we don't know.
Right.
We just don't know.
Right.
So it could be that this, the one that grew over in Oregon went extinct about, you know, 50 or 60 million years ago. I need to go the opposite direction. 50 or 40 million years ago.
Oh, yes.
Because it's going back, going up in time, right?
Mm.
So those went extinct, but that could have been its own species. We can't be 100% sure, but we're pretty positive. Essentially, one tree covered the entire northern hemisphere at one point or another.
And it was
the Don Redwood.
How about that?
Right?
Hey, that was our discussion, our second discussion of the Don Redwood. We have a big question to ask ourselves after the break. How does this make us feel any different than our first review?
That's right.
Casey, we'll answer that question after a quick break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary's Excellent Adventure. You know, here I am at the ripe old age of 35. And one thing that has become really important to me just over the last couple of years is privacy. Besides what I tell you here on the podcast, I basically don't want anyone to know anything about me unless I choose to tell them. And one way I up my privacy game is with NordVPN. Now, if you are like me and didn't know what a VPN was until a couple of weeks ago, let me tell you. A VPN is a virtual private network. And I said to myself, well, sure, that sounds cool, but I really don't know what it is or does. And then the moment I turned it on, I said, I get it now. A VPN changes your IP address, hides your virtual location, and encrypts your connection, which allows you to increase your privacy online. How many times per day do you get scam calls or spam email because your data got leaked somehow? I also get emails from companies saying, hey, I see you bought something with us recently. Unfortunately, we got hacked and your data is now being used to harm you. With a VPN, you do not have to worry about any of this. It secures you when you're using public Wi-Fi. It stops marketers and internet service providers from tracking and collecting your browsing history and your messages and lots of other private data. And you can change your location to any of hundreds of countries, unlocking the power of, I don't know, say, British Netflix. I didn't know how important it was until I started using one. That's the truth. So if you just want to check out the features and see if it's right for you, I bet there's something about a VPN that will surprise you. So get started with NordVPN at nordvpn.com/trees. That's nordvpn.com/trees. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link is in the description. Now go get secure.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the Don Redwood, our rediscussion of the Don Redwood. Mm-hmm. Casey. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't plan on giving these excellent adventure trees another cone score.
No.
Our cone scores were canon.
Exactly. They'll stay the same no matter what.
That's right. But you and I have decided to answer the question, does anything we talked about today change how you feel? And so, Casey, mm-hmm. as about the Don Redwood, I should
yes.
say.
Yes, all right.
Not about like religion or something.
Yeah, honestly, now.
Yeah. Be incredible
yeah.
if you discovered religion at your age.
Yeah, I've talked about you. It. I've talked about this tree a lot. Now I think I'm a Jainist.
I'm ready to worship this thing.
Yeah.
As a resident expert, we will begin with you, Casey. Any new right. thoughts on this Don Redwood?
You know, Alex, I don't think I have any real new thoughts.
Sure.
I still think that this is one of the coolest trees out there. Just plain and simple, period, and a conversation.
Easy statement.
Just, I think it's just spectacular. I guess the big thing that I could like think is like the story kind of is more interesting and like has a certain amount of lore to it. And then like reading more into the lore makes me think that it's like, I don't know, Alex. It's I like reading into it, but the lore and the whole like, wow, we found this tree and who did it what? It's more of a person thing, you know?
Less where, to do with the tree.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I like that there are people making sure that everyone has credit where credit is due and like kind of revising the old kind of colonialized history in this case, which I have to say also it's not the worst, you know, colonial necessary thing. But we did, it's just like the monkey puzzle. We gave it this flashy name in English called the Don Redwood. Wow. And everyone really likes that, right? That's really great. But it does still skip over all these other things. So I don't know. I don't know where I'm going, but I mean, my last score was what? 9.8.
That's correct.
That's a pretty high score. And I think I stick with that.
Like, yeah.
I think if anything, now that I've heard about it and everyone's so stoked, that I'd be like, honestly, it's not as cool as everyone sounds.
Oh, you want to be a contrarian about it, huh?
Now I'm just going to give it like an 8.6 and be like, yeah, Jar is way cooler than this tree, you know, when you come down to it.
It's too mainstream.
Yeah. So I don't. I'm going to stick with this. I don't think our discussion today has changed my opinion, which is already quite high, of the Don Redwood.
Wonderful, Casey.
What about you, Alex?
Well, I love context.
Gotcha.
I like enriching a story, enriching something you already knew, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
I really liked this tale. It was pretty mild in terms of colonialism, you know? So I like the story. I like this guy who, I'm grateful to this guy who wanted to give credit to the Chinese foresters.
Yeah, Mr. Merrill.
Merrill. Yeah. I kept wanting to say. What was the other name? See, there's too many characters.
There's too many characters.
Yeah. This is a fucking Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. At least the names are spelled correctly.
Right. How many Johns are in Game of Thrones?
With how many E's in their name?
Yeah, I don't think it changes my opinion negatively, certainly. And, okay. And I think it gives me a better appreciation for this drink.
All right, there you go. I appreciate that.
And I gave it a 9.4 back in the day.
Yeah.
And of course, we cannot change our scores.
We'll
That's
never
canon.
Change. Yeah.
But if I just had to give it like an updated score for today, although mm-hmm. it will not technically change my old score, I'd go 9.8.
9.8.
I'm up there with you.
All right. All yeah. right. So we're tied at 9.8. Yeah. Okay. I think that sounds good. I think that would be a good idea.
I just love this cone. I love it so much.
It's such a great cone.
It's one of my favorite cones.
I think it is my favorite cone.
That's impressive.
Of all of them.
That is very impressive. It's beautiful. Heard it here first, folks.
Yes, you did. In fact, I think I've said it before.
You heard it here third, folks.
You've also heard it here before, folks. Yeah, 100%. I think that's very fair.
Well, dude, that was our rediscussion.
All right, dude.
Of the Don Redwood. It's time for a very Don Redwood Q&A, Casey.
Oh, I love Don Redwood Q's and A's.
We asked our lovely patrons, patreon.com/arbitrarypod, if you want to support the podcast.
The Quercus and Alder level.
That's right. We said, ask your Don Redwood questions here. And we got plenty of responses. We're going to go through these in a bit of a rapid fire because we usually only answer one question per episode. And this episode, we're answering 17.
Yeah.
So let's get into it, Case.
Let's get it done.
This question is from Sage Miner, who says, not a question, actually, but I would love to hear you guys do a deep dive on the adventure of finding the Don Redwoods.
Sage, see minute 5.
Been there, done that, Sage.
Of this podcast.
Also, are they closely related to sequoias and redwoods? Yes!
They are. They are very closely related. They used to be in the same family before that family was a part of the cypress family, Cupressaceae.
That was noted. Taxoniaceae?
Taxodiaceae. Yeah, exactly. So that's the family that initially came from the bald cypress, Taxodium.
Right.
So that was the first one they found, or the first one that was named by Western science. So then it becomes the benefactor, the scion of that family, because at the time it was the only one. It was different enough. So, okay, cool. That's in that family. Taxodium, Taxodiaceae. Oh, shoot. What are these things? Oh, right. It's a big tree. That's a redwood. Okay, that's a Don Redwood. And I think also Glyptostrobus is in there as well. And maybe one more?
Can I just say, Cupressaceae is such a mess.
Oh my God, it is. But you know what? It's a story for another time. Mm. It is such a beautiful mess.
Wow. Thanks, Sage. Daniel Christensen says, I've heard that Don Redwoods have armpits that act like a bald cypress knee, but would love to hear from the experts if that's true. Well, as we've discussed,
there you go.
Armpits are only like the bald cypress knees in the fact that they're named after a body part.
Yeah, and they appear on the tree.
Sure.
Yeah.
They do not have the same function.
Exactly. The knees being pneumatophores helping for gas exchange, and the armpits being just a kind of morphological attribute of the tree.
Yeah.
Great question, Daniel.
Very good. Blair asks, are there any North American animals that will benefit from planting more of these? I wonder if there has been any relationships brewing since the introduction of these trees.
That is very curious. I don't really think so. Because they don't have anything really to offer. I'm sure something would eat the seeds.
Sure.
But other than that, I can't really guess a whole lot. They're deciduous, so they don't have very good cover like an evergreen tree would, so you wouldn't really nest in them other than during the leaf on season. So they're not good for just chilling. But almost any tree is good to nest in, depending on the bird. So I can't think of them. I don't know that there would be a whole lot. One of the big things is that trees that have the best relationships with a bunch of things are the ones that either get their leaves eaten or they decay and are great homes for a lot of things.
Sure.
These, because of the way they live, don't really do either of those things. So they've kind of outgrown, from the tree's perspective, these negative attributes.
How about that?
So there you go.
What are your other big ones? Squirrels, birds, and deer are sort of like your big three.
Yeah.
Kind of tree herbivores, right?
I would say so. But you also have a lot of insects that do that. They do any amount of herbivory.
Sure. Herbivory.
Yeah, you've never heard that before.
No,
Alex.
I love that though.
It's such a great term. Herbivory.
What have you been doing tonight? Oh, I've been doing quite a bit of herbivory.
Oh, you have.
Ate some salads.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I had some kale. A little herbivory.
Well, thank you, Blair.
Yeah, that's a great question, Blair.
Allison LeBlanc Don Redwoods make me think about extinct trees.
Mm-hmm.
Fair.
Good, fair.
Do point. You think we should be working toward resurrecting any extinct tree species?
Ooh.
Are they working on this currently? Do you know any that you'd love to see brought back?
Wow.
I have an opinion on this.
What's yours?
I think, like Jurassic Park, let it be extinct.
Okay.
You
yeah.
bring back an extinct species of tree, it has some crazy innate tree disease that spreads to every other tree in the world and destroys us all.
Alex, you know that that's kind of happening? Apparently, there are long, not dead, but long dormant, long not happened viruses that are now coming out of the melting permafrost up north.
Interesting.
Yes. So that's where the zombie apocalypse is going to happen. Some
wow.
literal Mongol is going to be like, ah, wake up, and then just be a zombie Mongol army that's going to come destroy the rest of us. Now,
yeah.
that's not a movie waiting to happen.
Yeah, you got to pitch that script, Case.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay, to answer this question, I don't really, not that I know of, for sure. It's a little bit different because to do an extinct animal, you have to get like a little bit of their DNA.
Yeah.
But you can synthesize that DNA to get like a germ. I don't know exactly how they do it, but they get enough DNA that they can then put that DNA into an embryo and have that embryo then grow using that DNA. The
wow.
mammoth is the big thing now. I guess, no, the dodo is the big thing that people are trying to do these days.
Okay.
I think last month that was kind of all over the news.
Bring the dodo back.
Yeah. But with trees, you can't really do it quite the same because the species are completely different and you don't have like a tree embryo necessarily. But you know what? I guarantee someone out there who does genetic like implanting could be like, well, we can just grow a tree that has the attributes of this tree.
Yeah.
But is it exactly that tree? I don't know. So that's a good question.
It might be like a fucked up version of it. That,
yeah. Know. Like some kind of weird, freaky, like cherry with ancient dead Arcaria bark or something. I don't know. But that's a good question. And I don't know that anyone is, because everything that is alive today is like doing the work. Like there's not some ancient tree that's died where they're like, oh, if only we had the wood of that tree again, or the leaves or the fruit or something like that. Maybe the chestnut's the only one they're kind of doing.
Oh, sure.
But
the chestnut's not extinct.
It's not quite extinct. It might be like functionally extinct.
I see.
But that's a, so that, yeah, that's a tight rope to walk. I'm not sure.
Interesting question, Allison.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Avery says, I'm growing a Don Redwood in a wetlands in Texas.
Nice.
I live in North Texas. I live in North Central Texas, and the Don Redwood is planted maybe 10 to 15 feet from the water's edge. Will it survive? How can I ensure its safety? It's planted at the edge of a prehistoric garden with petrified wood placed right up against. Oh, fuck. It's planted on the edge of a prehistoric garden with petrified wood placed right side up, scattered around.
Oh, I love that. Although it's a bit morbid, you know?
Yeah.
I think that
it's like a Civil War battlefield. Oh. Just all these
yeah.
petrified plants.
There's just like skeletons and they're like, yeah, well, go right there. And they're just looking around, seeing all their dead relatives.
It's pretty dark.
Yeah. But then again, maybe a tree's just like, oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I'm back.
I made it and you didn't. That's what the tree is saying to these things.
Avery, just to be clear, we love this idea. I personally love this idea of a prehistoric garden with the prehistoric garden plants growing there.
Yeah.
But I love the anthropomorphizing of it as well. Thinking about literally just like putting a playground in the middle of a graveyard just to be like, yeah, there you go. Remember, these are all your ancestors. They're dead.
Everything is finite,
but you're gonna be fine.
So what do you think, Case? Will this Don Redwood be okay?
Sorry, I'm still tickled by that. Yes.
Yeah, I would think it's like, this is sort of like a bald cypress type situation.
I think so, yeah. It might get a little cooler than the Don Redwood normally likes. They like it to keep a little bit warm, but the bald cypress grows down there and grows perfectly well. So my guess is that as long as you do keep it well watered during the later kind of drier season, I think it should be fine.
There you go.
Yeah, so I bet you it'll be okay.
How about that? Thank you, Avery. Carl JG, as we know him, did you ever go on a road trip and take pictures?
Yes. Thank you, Carl.
Carl's other question, what prehistoric animals, if any, utilize the Don Redwood?
I love Carl. You know, that's a good question, Alex. Mm. I think that perhaps there is very few animals that really got into it. Maybe like dinosaurs, some big herbivorous kinds of things would eat it. But I don't really know of any animals that eat it today. In fact, almost none. That's the kind of famous things about redwoods and all of those really old trees, is that they just don't have an animal that predates upon their leaves.
Right, because they are...
ecological anachronism.
It's an anachronism.
Yeah, that's yes. Right. It is, but also like it's an anachronism, but in a way that it's like just outgrown all the things that used to eat it. Hmm. So it hasn't, the difference between a kind of a Maclura pomifera, the Osage orange.
Bless you.
Thank you. Excuse me. Having an old thing that they developed in concert with something.
Yeah.
Then that thing went away and now they're like, well, okay, I'm still like this. On this case, it's more that there was like this arms race and one of the arms racers dropped out. So now you just have this thing. It's like, great. Well, I'm perfectly adapted for everything.
I see.
You know, so it's like one, it still works perfectly well. The other, it doesn't work perfectly well.
I gotcha.
I think that, does that make sense?
I think so.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So yeah, that's a really good question.
Yeah, I wish I could see these animals with my eyes.
I'm going to say dinosaurs, JG. Dinosaurs.
Are dinosaurs animals?
Yeah.
They're animalia?
What? Yeah, of course. Are you serious?
I don't know.
Okay, it's a good question, Alex.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, you reacted extremely poorly.
Next question.
Oh, Jesus. From ASIBS121.
What up?
Well, they're not like animals the way we know animals.
Well, they are though, aren't they? I mean, everything is
sure.
An animal.
I don't know if you, I don't know. Okay.
It has bones,
hold
muscles.
On. I didn't know if prehistoric things are allowed in modern taxonomy.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, they certainly are. Okay. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Just like
I guess
we were talking
Don
about.
Redwood is.
Exactly. And all the other fossils. Like, just because they're not alive today does not mean that when they were alive, they were something significantly different.
Okay.
It could have been, you know, like there are certainly things that we've found fossils of where we're like, well, this thing doesn't exist anymore.
I guess I sort of imagined like Here's a Dinosauriaceae clade with all of the dinosaurs. We don't really talk about it in modern circumstances because they are all fucking dead.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah. Well, so in this case, yes. So animals are, that's like the biggest, you know, there's like fungus, protozoa, animals, plants, like kind of the big ones way up there.
Right.
And there's more that I didn't name. Read the book, The Tangled Tree. They'll talk all about it. Meanwhile, there is, you know, these long family trees that come out. So some of the old trees have died away, but some of their kin from way back when have continued on, and we now have their descendants today.
Oh, so like birds, those come from, those are in the same like branch as dinosaurs.
Yeah, they came off of the branch, okay. the same basal branch that dinosaurs came off of.
Just the dinosaurs are grayed out and the birds are in color.
Exactly. Okay. And same thing with like turtles and
sharks,
like
alligators.
Thank you. I was trying to think of alligators and it just was not coming to me. Mm. So yeah, exactly. Those old kind of ancient things that we find fossils of turtles in fossil beds filled with other dinosaurs and sauropods and
right,
things like that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it's just one, the dinosaur branch broke off and died a long time ago. Other branches have continued to move through. So the answer to your question is yes. And I'm sorry, Alex, that I looked at it and was like, of course. What do you mean?
Well, you know, I asked a half-baked question and you answered with a half-baked answer. Yeah, but that's what I get for asking half-baked questions.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, thanks, ASIBS, for your question. 121.
ASIBS121 asks, I desperately wish they could grow in Minnesota. Do you think doing so as a bonsai would be possible?
Honestly, yes. Do they not grow in Minnesota? I would think you could plant one in Minnesota.
Well, there you go.
Hold on. Let me just do a quick Metasequoia, Don Redwood, Metasequoia glyptosporides, the Don Redwood. It goes down to USDA Zone 4. So I think that Minnesota probably has that. Let's check this out.
Wow, yeah. Minnesota's a 5, it looks like.
Okay, that's great. So you're good.
Thanks, ASIBS. Max, two questions. What is the actual story of discovery? Was it all Indiana Jones-esque?
Yeah.
Or was it just an unfulfilling story like Game of Thrones? Wow.
Ooh.
They mean the TV show, obviously.
So burned.
Not the books.
So I don't know. At this point, our question is turned back on you, Max. What do you think?
Oh, sure. Yes, because we've told that story.
Yeah.
Can they be propagated from cuttings?
Yes, I believe they quite literally are done that way most often.
There you go.
Yes.
Here's a question from somebody who input no name into their Patreon subscription, Casey.
Wow, that's incredible. Good job. Anonymous.
Yeah, Anonymous that's says, sick. Not a question, just wanted to share my appreciation for the pod. Seriously makes all my work days as a greenhouse worker enjoyable. Thank you.
Anonymous. Back at
you. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for doing your greenhouse work. In fact, see if you can do some propagation by cutting of Don Redwood.
Let's follow up with Max, would you?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Travis says, based on observations of the Don Redwoods in Bellingham, Washington, it's only the oldest trees, two trees planted in the early 50s mm-hmm. from the original seeds collected in the late 40s, case, that have male flowers. Yeah. Since these two trees are about a mile apart, is there any chance the seeds will be viable anywhere in town? Are they self-fertile? Neither of the original plantings have younger trees anywhere near them, planted or wild.
This is very curious.
Are Don Redwoods self-fertile?
They are monoecious. So both male and female cones are on the same plant.
Okay.
So I don't know that they are self-fertile. That is a good question. My guess would be no, because generally self-fertile things don't do as well, because the whole point of the fertilization by others is you get better genes.
Right. It's not optimal.
It's not optimal. So I think that my guess is that if you just plant those two next to each other, they'll make cones if they can. So I don't know why they aren't. That's a very good question.
Love it. Thank you, Travis.
Great question.
Maddie, why they got those armpits?
Oh, yeah.
We go back and listen, Maddie. I like this acting like it's Maddie's fault that they asked a question we've already answered.
Yeah, I'm like, Maddie, come on. What are you doing here?
We're just playing, Maddie. Sky.
Sky News. I love that. That's the sports thing in Europe, or in England specifically.
Sure.
Nice.
Football, huh?
Oh, yeah.
How closely related to the coastal redwoods are the Dons? There is a grove of Dons near my house in eastern Pennsylvania, and it's not really a place you'd suspect a redwood to be. Although the arboretum I see them at has many estate champion trees. So...
interesting. So this is actually kind of an interesting question, because I don't know that I really have a good answer.
How closely they are related to redwoods?
Yeah, I know that they're so close that like our beginning heroes in our story thought they were the same tree, right? But I don't think I've ever seen, and I'm actively looking for right now, a cladogram of what used to be Taxodiaceae, that family. Because you would be able to see like which ones are closely related.
Cladogram.
Yeah. Great. We've looked at these several different times.
Okay.
You and I, because we've basically been trying to see, well, which trees are closely related to which other trees.
Okay, I'm looking at them now. I remember.
Yeah. But I can't find any right quick between these two trees. Between this whole family. And I would be willing to bet that there certainly is one. I just have not been able to actually find it. I did not do that research.
There you go.
However,
it's possible.
Yes, they are very closely related. They are next of kin. So closely related that my guess is that they are... I don't want to say so closely related, because as we said before, like there could have been several different species of Don Redwood across the world and we just don't know.
Sure.
So it could be that they are more like very closely related, but when we connect the dots, there's probably several dots in between that we're missing because we don't have the DNA to show. So like you find a fossil and it looks exactly the same, but like we said, there are two different beech trees that look almost exactly the same, except for the leaves have more or fewer veins, right?
Right.
If we find the seeds are like almost exactly the same. So we're like, well, okay, the fruit looks the same, so this must be just one tree. So there's one species of beech tree across North America and Europe. for instance, let's just say.
Okay.
Even though in reality, if we had the DNA, we could actually say, no, these are two different trees. So we can split those up. And now there's a second dot where there used to just be one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be willing to bet if we took the giant sequoias, Glyptostrobus, and the sequoias and the Don Redwood, and we put them all together, the thing, our cladogram, is going to be like, yeah, they're all right next to each other on this cladogram. But if we had 10 other trees from the past that have gone extinct, the relationship would be, you know, different.
Right. You'd be giving them context. Like, oh, these are actually very dissimilar.
Exactly. You say, wow, okay, they're really not the same.
Yeah.
And they come from, they're like six different levels of differences.
But if
you just make a cladogram, all we can see is, yes, they're right next to each other.
I got you.
So that's a hard question, at least as far as I know. We'll have to ask some other more smart people better questions.
Thank you, Sky.
Yes.
Ridge Runner.
What's up?
Any relation? I have trouble distinguishing Don Redwood and Bald Cypress. Hey, don't we all?
Yeah.
Is there a way to tell them apart? I have some trees in my local park in Fortuna, California.
Okay.
I assumed they were redwood because they are planted with coast redwood, which are native, and giant sequoia. But they also look just like the Bald Cypress in most ID comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
Always wondered about this. Well, I would say go to the cones.
Yes. I was waiting for you to say a second thing on that.
No.
Yes, that is the perfect way to do it.
The cones look very dissimilar.
Yes. So a Bald Cypress, there's a couple different things. Our good friend Rex Wu also commented on this. Heck yeah, Rex. Glad to see you. And Rex made the easiest first thing to look at is the leaf arrangement, those little twiglets that come out. On the Don Redwood, they're oppositely arranged. On the Bald Cypress, they are alternately arranged. So that's the quickest one you can tell. The other difference is that the bark on a Bald Cypress is mostly smooth. It doesn't get really thick and furrowed, whereas a Don Redwood, it gets just a little bit thicker, a little bit more furrowed.
Mm.
So it's not quite as smooth and nice looking. The Bald Cypress tends to be very, very nice and columnar, whereas because of all the armpits and all the weird stuff that the Don Redwood does, it tends to have a shape that looks way more like weird and irregular
sure.
as it's growing up.
There you go.
Next thing, just before we end, like you talked about, the cone. I want to tell them the differences. The cone of the Don Redwood is perfectly square. It has two oppositely arranged cone scales that are at 90 degrees to their other cone scales. Like you said, like Lincoln logs kind of stacked on top of each other.
Yeah.
But the really short ones that are like right. very tiny.
They have the little notch in the middle.
Exactly. Versus the Bald Cypress, they're like little eggs. They're all smashed together. And when they get dry, they kind of fall apart, kind of disintegrate.
Yeah. I think in our Bald Cypress episode, we compared Bald Cypress cones to like dried dog droppings.
Yes. Exactly. That's precisely.
Droppings.
I like dog scat.
Dog scat.
Yeah.
Wild dog scat. Yeah. There you go.
Hey, all right, everyone.
Well, thank you to all of our patrons who asked a question about the Don Redwood.
That's right.
If you want to ask us a question, join the Patreon at the $3 Q&A. That's Quercus and Alder tier. $3 a month, you have access to Casey and I, essentially.
Straight up.
Hey, we're a cheap date, huh?
Oh, hey, yeah, very much so.
$5, a couple bucks more. You get two bonus episodes of this show every month on the Patreon.
That's right. Just recently, we did a lovely interview with Bill Bielek.
That's right. Here's a fun example of the kind of thing you might find on the Patreon. Casey interviewed Bill Bielek, who's in charge of Nakamoto Forestry.
Mm-hmm. Yep, here in North America.
Yep, who do the Yakasugi wood treatment
yep.
of the Japanese cryptomeria, the Sugi. So Casey took that information, and we made an episode about it. But on the Patreon, you can hear the original interview
mm-hmm.
and hear it from the man himself.
Exactly.
Pretty cool.
It's a lot of fun.
That's right. Above that is our flagship tier, the Cone of the Month Club.
Beautiful.
Hands down, my favorite tier, Casey.
It's great. And this month is, I guess technically last month, the month before last, because everything's on a bit of a lag.
Yeah, by design, unfortunately.
Yes, by design. But man, The sugar pine, I'm so excited. Like, I just, it's my favorite so far.
Yeah.
It's, we have so much fun with these things, Alex.
I'm pretty excited for that one. Or I was excited for that one in the past. We're time traveling. I can't keep it all straight.
Exactly. I don't know where we are right now. I don't know when we are.
I'll tell you where we are, Casey. We're at the next tier, Arbitrary Plus.
Yeah, all right.
$15 a month gets you all of that stuff we already described, plus two live streams a month, one with Casey and I. And one with just me playing a tree or nature-themed video game. That happens once a month. And above that, a very generous tier. Generous admission. It starts at $20. This is the above and beyond. The we turn our eyes down at you as you hand it to us.
Exactly.
We're so honored and humbled. Yeah, that's just the if you want to give a little extra to the podcast, if it means that much to you, $20, you can starts there. You can get whatever you want. We are extremely grateful to our patrons, our audience, anybody who listens or supports this show.
Well, Alex, what do you think of our discussion on paleobotany?
Wild stuff, Case. But I have to be honest, even though Shigeru Miki can't hear or see us, I still feel like we're intruding on his personal space. There's some important historical things happening here, and it just doesn't feel right to be a fly on the wall.
I fully agree. Let's get Tobin back, and we'll head off to our next adventure. Let me just...
Please teach me how to do that.
Hello, boys.
Tobin?
It is I. The ghost of Arbitrary Future.
Ah, so he's leaning into it. Fabulous. Okay.
He's taking back the narrative. I love it.
I take you now to the future. A future of unimaginable doom. That is, unless you right a wrong. A wrong you levied against a tree years ago. A tree that did not deserve or warrant such a wrong. A wrong...
I'm sorry. Can I interrupt? Is it? Can we edit this down? This is unintelligible.
No, I think I know what he means. I'm ready, ghost dude. Show us the way.
Hop onto my time traveling tree stump, and also take my hand, which is a new rule.
Beep 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 boop boop.
To San Dimas, California, 2688.
Hey, we're back on track, dude.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.